Do not come.
I'm going to come.
I'm going to come to your house is what the FBI said
real?
To Donald Trump, which prompted him to be on Sean Hannity recently. Perfect segue to start the episode.
Giving an excellent, riveting, thought-provoking, some fancy V-word type of interview. You'll know if you've seen it.
Oh, facts. Voluminous?
Voluminous.
Voluminous.
A voluminous.
A voluminous interview. Yeah, Trump was on there. Everyone probably saw the take where he was like, you know, you can just declassify things by thinking about them.
As the president. I can declassify by saying it, even by thinking about it, yeah. I can declassify a document.
Exactly, which already isn't true, but already kind of like an admission of guilt, you know what I mean? Because then he's kind of admitting that he took them, but he declassified them
in
his mind.
Yeah, they're declassified in his head, but that logic, it doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't work in the real world.
You can't just say that, because what if Joe Biden just thought like, oh, they're reclassified, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then what? But then he also, Trump's in trouble right now, Doug.
For real.
He's got a lot of legal challenges. He's got the one in New York about lying to banks. Yeah, like being a fraud, you know, defrauding
banks.
Yeah. He's got the investigation for January 6th and inciting an insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got the FBI Mar-a-Lago stuff and the thing in Georgia of him calling Brad Raffensperger and like, hey, find me these 13,000 votes or whatever.
Real.
So bro is struggling right now, but
down bad.
The dumpy is looking better than ever.
Oh my God. He carries all his stress down there.
That's what I'm saying, dog. It's just crazy. Taking an interview from your Mar-a-Lago home with Sean Hannity, and then
I just love how wild that Sean Hannity interview was, because like there's one point where Trump starts talking about like everything that happened leading up to the raid,
yeah.
And he's like, the FBI told me they wanted to do this super quietly, and then I didn't cooperate, and they raided my house.
Yeah.
They blindsided me by raiding me after I didn't cooperate with any of their official communication.
Yeah, and he was kind of implying that like the FBI had planted documents in his home, right? Like,
yeah.
He was trying to get there, and then Sean Hannity was like, well, just like release the clips. Like you have the video, right? And he's like, oh, I'm not going to do that.
I can't do that because they won't let me, because what if it exposes the FBI agents and then somebody goes and hurts them? And he's like, you could pixel their faces, couldn't you?
Trump is like the best person at projecting his problems onto others, because mm-hmm. in that interview, he immediately went to, maybe they were looking for Hillary's emails. maybe the servers in Mar-a-Lago. It could be anywhere. Who knows? It's like, Doug, nobody cares anymore. Nobody cares about Hillary Clinton's emails anymore. And then Sean Hannity was like, I can't believe they dragged the kids into it.
Oh my God. And he starts talking about this meme that he saw on Truth Social somebody put a picture of Barron Trump next to Hunter Biden. And he said, which one do you think looks more sweet and innocent?
Uh-huh.
One of those kids' rooms got raided and one of them didn't. And it's like, one, hold on, there's a couple of things here. One, Barron Trump, isn't he literally a minor?
Yeah.
You're taking a minor and comparing him to like a 35-year-old man.
Crackhead.
a 35-year-old man.
Mental
and saying,
issues.
Look at who's more innocent here. Like, yeah, obviously,
right.
Dog. One, that's a given. And two, one of their rooms got raided. One of them didn't. Your whole fucking place got raided. You had mm-hmm. top secret documents. It's kind of par for the course here.
Yeah, no, bro is actually in a lot of trouble. I don't think that anything will really happen. If we have to make a prediction, I don't think that any charges are really going to stick or like get him in jail.
The only thing that I think has any potential is the New York stuff. The defrauding
stuff.
Is
that technically like a criminal case or is that just civil?
Because
if it's civil, he's not going to end up in jail. You know
no idea.
I mean? Yeah.
I have no
exactly.
idea.
But also the Trump Organization is under investigation for... What was it? Like the paying executives more.
Oh,
or like the
that's also
for
a New York case, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah. Bro's got like 6 or 7 legal cases, and people have the audacity to say, like, wow, liberals and leftists really can't forget about Donald Trump. He's living in their head rent-free. It's like, yeah, he's a criminal who's vying for office, who's the front runner for the Republican nomination in 2024.
Speaking of that, somewhat tangentially related, I saw a headline. Get ready for this. I saw a headline that said, Liz Cheney... If Trump gets the GOP nomination in 2024, Liz Cheney will run as a Democrat. Who is celebrating that? Like, who sees that and thinks, oh, yeah, great, good for Liz Cheney. I'm glad she's coming. She's going to vote the same. She's going to do everything the same.
Everything the same.
You're going to have another Joe Manchin, but worse.
She won't be, like, as blatantly racist. You know what I mean? Like, she'll still be racist. Like war on drugs type racism. But she won't be as explicit about it as Donald Trump is.
Yeah.
Also, no one's going to vote for her, dog.
Who fucking cares if she would run as a Democrat? And she's only doing it because she knows she can never run as a Republican again because everyone hates her.
Yeah, and she did say in that one interview that, like, she hasn't given up on politics. Like, she's not stopping. Well, she, like, you have millions of dollars. You could just chill, you know, live in Wyoming for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You could wait however many years until, you know, your kids want to run for Congress. Mm-hmm. And then the Cheney dynasty can make a comeback. But just, like, chill out.
For real.
But she's not going to do that. And I honestly think, like, if we have to make predictions, the funniest option is probably going to be the one that happens. And I would think the funniest is that, like, Joe Biden dies and then Liz Cheney runs and Kamala Harris gets, like, kicked out.
That's like,
you know what
the,
I mean?
The Hitto razor. Exactly. You know? The funniest Hitto's option razor. Is often what happens the most.
Exactly. That's the most likely thing to happen in my humble
it's
opinion.
The funniest one.
Exactly.
I love
exactly.
that. I would love that personally. She got my vote.
For real. Liz Cheney.
I'm with her.
I'm a Liz Cheney head.
I'm with her. Back to the show, everybody.
Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. You're we got quite the downer episode for you all planned today. Not very much good news on the agenda today, but before we get into it, I'm gonna remind you all, go to headintheoffice.com, use code HITOBOYS for 15% off your order.
If you've been holding out, wait.
1 week left.
One week left on the promo.
Yeah, 1 week left. This episode airs on Wednesday, September something.
27th.
27th or something like that. Or 28th. Whenever it comes out, right? Wednesday.
Whatever that first week in October is. Exactly. That's when it's over.
It's over. 1 week from the date that this episode airs. So get in while you can. Get that promo code 15% off. After that, it's going away forever.
Gone.
Gone forever. Never going to make a return. But also, if you want to help out the show, and I know you all do. I know you all want to help out the show quite a bit. Go to patreon.com/headintheofficepod, become a patron, get early access to our episodes, be a part of the community.
Get us to that $600 goal so you can get a question into Q&A. If you've got a burning question you're waiting for us to answer, if, what is it, 81 of you have a burning question you're waiting to answer, just shoot a dollar our way.
Exactly.
Get us to that $600 goal, you know?
Exactly. Get us to that $600 goal. Be one of the names that floats into my head before I fall asleep at night.
It's like you want to, like, count sheep. Before you go to sleep, I go through the Patreon list. I go, Mattias T, John G, and the B Block, Clayton LaFort.
Right before I go to bed every night.
Every
it calms
night
me
to
down.
Go to sleep.
It reminds me that there is still hope in this world. But also check out our YouTube, our TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Discord, Hitto Extras, P.O. Box.
Yeah.
Still an option for you all. I know you all want to send us some stuff. But you can also leave a 5-star review.
Just like this lovely person did.
Just like this lovely person did. Disco Thread left us a review. Subject line, I'll probably become a patron eventually. Maybe. Probably. They said, I typed out a long review and ended up erasing it due to me basically just saying these guys are dope in 10 different ways. So put simply, these guys are dope. Keep up the good work. P.S. We should probably all become patrons to pressure them into putting out more than one episode a week. Much love from Podunk, Georgia, Dakota. I agree.
I also agree, especially with the Patreon part.
No, exactly. Because here's the thing, folks. Right, like we're busy people. You know, we're in college.
College seniors
trying to build a future for ourselves. In a world that seemingly is crumbling all the time.
Graduation literally right around the corner.
Exactly.
In 8 months, graduating, entering the real world, having to get real people jobs, unless
you all flock to the Patreon.
Somehow we can pop off and maintain
that
stellar income for the rest of our lives.
Exactly. As long as y'all head over to the Patreon, give us a little bit of a boost, and then maybe, you know, if this is our full-time focus,
really?
We can be producing more than one piece of content
especially
each week.
Especially if you want more than one episode a week.
Oh,
if
yeah.
This is our full-time focus. Streaming.
Like, okay.
Excellent.
I know we rail against the free market a lot, right?
All
we're probably going to today at some point. But allow me to indulge you all in a little lesson about the free market, okay? If you want a company or a group or whatever to pop off and do more of what it's doing, vote with your dollar. Vote with your dollar, you know what I'm saying?
Support small businesses, and then when those small businesses blow up, also still support them.
The ballot drop box is open. You know what I'm saying? Come drop off your ballots here. Patreon.com/headintheofficepod.
That's right.
Today, though, we're going to talk a little bit about colonialism and natural disasters and climate change. We'll talk about money and politics, too. Really? Got some interesting stuff on that.
Talk about some banned books.
Book bannings, book burnings, if you will.
Ooh, and we'll talk about abortion.
Ooh, our favorite topic to talk about.
Real.
I am not pro-choice. I'm pro-abortion. every fetus. All right, getting right into the episode, though. We got to talk about Puerto Rico. So as some of you may have heard, Puerto Rico last week was hit with a massive storm, Hurricane Fiona, and that knocked out the power grid for basically everyone on the island for some amount of time. Thankfully, the hurricane hasn't been deadly for the most part. Mm-hmm. There's been a few deaths throughout the nations that it's ran through, including Puerto Rico. But for the most part, it's just been structural damage, which is really bad, and we'll get into that in just a second. But Puerto Ricans have been living with massive floods, power outages, destroyed homes and bridges for several days. And of course, this only comes 5 years after, Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico in 2017, and that was a really big one that caused power outages for months on end. And a lot of people were struggling then, and the island, which we'll get to, didn't get a whole lot of aid from the federal government, which wasn't great, Now, thankfully, our President Biden, Dark Brandon, has committed to supplying Puerto Rico with federal funding. I don't know what the number is yet, but federal funding for debris removal, rebuilding. And I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in Puerto Rico. I want to go through a little bit of the history and make a point.
I love that. I love talking about neocolonialism.
We're going to talk about a little bit of neocolonialism. I wonder if some of you can predict where we're going based on, you know, discussions about power outages and stuff like that. But yeah, Biden has committed to helping Puerto Rico, which I think is like the first time a president in recent history has ever done anything for Puerto Rico, no strings attached.
No, it's crazy because that's like the only, I didn't hear much about this, very busy week. I didn't hear much about this until like a couple days ago. And the only thing I really heard is that it's crazy that Joe Biden is the first president in forever to just give money to Puerto Rico do a bunch of like theatrics surrounding it. He didn't whip out the t-shirt cannon and start shooting out fucking paper towels like at the Trump. People who fucking need them and are clamoring for them.
Yeah, no, he didn't send like a few cases of water bottles down.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's get into a little history lesson about Puerto Rico, an island just off the shore of Florida, a couple hundred miles. So until 1917, Puerto Rico was basically just another territory that the United States owned and basically had colonial ties to, right? Like we never actually called any of our territories colonies, but functionally that's what they were. Like we've never understood, or we've never like blatantly said like the U.S. is a colonial power, but we know that that's basically the case. But in 1917, Congress granted every Puerto Rican born after 1899 U.S. citizenship. And that is still the case today. So if you don't know, and I feel like a lot of people probably don't know, every Puerto Rican is a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, it's just like everyone in American Samoa is also a U.S. citizen, and they all vote in like the federal elections, right?
They do vote, and they have their own government, but the problem is that they have no statehood. So they don't actually have any representation in Congress. They have no ability to actually put pressure on Congress, and I think they get one electoral vote. And that obviously doesn't matter in the face of, you know, 534 other electoral votes. So they have no ability to actually put Congress pressure on Congress for anything. And the citizenship that they were granted at the beginning of the 1900s wasn't for altruistic reasons. President Wilson just wanted to be able to draft them into the World War I effort. That is the only reason that they were granted citizenship.
Of course,
that was used again for World War II as well. So Puerto Ricans have been fighting for the United States and against Nazism back during World War II and haven't been treated very well throughout history. Now, throughout the 1950s and 60s, Puerto Rico began to industrialize, upgrade their infrastructure, very similar to the United States. We had a lot of economic growth during that time, especially after World War II, and we were, I think we had like 50% of the world's wealth just in the United States.
Wow.
Obviously, Puerto Rico didn't get to reap a lot of the benefits being an unincorporated territory, but still some of the economic investment and development spilled over into Puerto Rico as well. And then PREPA was created. Now, PREPA was the government agency that managed the power grid. And PREPA did really well for a while. I don't remember what the acronym stands for. It's Puerto Rico something, something, something.
Energy something.
Yeah, exactly. PREPA did pretty well for a while, played a large role in Puerto Rico's industrialization, you know, turning dirt roads into paved roads, making buildings more sturdy, not out of wood, but out of concrete, et cetera, right? Just typical things you associate with industrialization, more jobs, more infrastructure, more of an ability for people, or a better quality of living for everybody that's living there. And just like in mainland America in the 1980s, austerity came. And budget cuts came, and neoliberalism came, and deregulation came, which led to a decrease in the quality of the power grid in Puerto Rico, because the power grid, PREPA, had to start running a bit more like a business amid budget cuts. Puerto Rico became more and more gentrified as investors moved in, so, you know, I mean, you can imagine how typical gentrification works, and it was basically magnified in Puerto Rico, because if you move from the continental U.S. to Puerto Rico, and this is still the rule today, you pay 0% capital gains tax. You pay nothing in capital
No
gains
capital tax. Gains?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking insane. And that's ludicrous.
That was a measure that was put in place in Puerto Rico to get capital investors to move to the island to have their money be there, which you can imagine just resulted in them buying up like entire neighborhoods.
Huge swaths of land.
And just not having to pay taxes on it. And of course, those taxes didn't go to the Puerto Rican government, which they would have otherwise.
That's fucking insane.
Yep.
That's fucking insane. Yep. Housing and that's like, you wonder why it's just a tourist state now.
Yeah.
Like it's just tourism. The whole economy runs off of it.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen like throughout the last, I don't know, however many years, you've seen big celebrities say like, yeah, moving to Puerto Rico. I think you had Jake Paul or Logan Paul, one of the two, said that they were going to move to Puerto Rico, and then they got shit on because they were like, you're just like colonizing. Yeah, you're just rich, yeah, trying to get away from taxes. That's all it is. But yeah, if you move from the mainland United States to Puerto Rico, 0% capital gains tax.
That's fucking insane.
You literally pay nothing in capital gains tax. It's crazy. So housing was being built that native-born Puerto Ricans couldn't live in. Wealthy white Americans started to move into the island and soaking up all the economic growth because of these no-tax incentives. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people began to leave Puerto Rico, which of course limited the tax revenue the government was able to use. So just like in mainland America, deindustrialization was basically happening.
Yeah.
Jobs were being lost, and the economy was becoming more, I don't know, fictive, squishy, speculative, and hanging on to these wealthy investors that were just moving in and gentrifying everything and making it worse for everyone that already lived there.
Love that.
It's the same thing that happened in, you know, cities in the United States, but of course those cities actually had representation in Congress. So they had it a little bit better. But following austerity from the 1980s, PREPA went into massive debt and began running a lot more like a business. The maintenance of the power grid started to slow down. And as the organization went further into debt, they began just being pretty awful towards the customers in general. After Hurricane Maria, PREPA said they were $9 billion in debt, which you can imagine not very good when we're talking about the sole provider of power for an entire island of people. FEMA, which is a federal government organization, if you don't know, they're responsible for like cleaning up after disasters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. After Hurricane Maria, they promised to spend around $12 billion on upgrades, which covered all of the debt and like permanent upgrades the island was going to need. But as of 2020, FEMA only spent $7 million of those dollars on permanent upgrades, which is less than 1% of what they were promising. 0.05%.
Wait, 7 million?
Yes. Only 7 million of
out
that
of
went
12
to
billion?
Permanent up- yes. Yes.
Yeah, what?
They promised $12 billion. They've only spent $7 million because the island, the government of the island, and FEMA couldn't agree on what to put the money towards. So FEMA just hasn't spent the money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so Puerto Ricans are... And I want you to keep in the back of your mind, while this is all happening, Puerto Ricans are just being fucked over in the process.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, they can't advocate because FEMA's a federal organization. Yes. They have no federal representation, mm-hmm, except for, like, what, a couple delegates?
Right, they have... Right, and you can just ignore delegates.
Yeah, they have no fucking power.
Which is what everyone except, like, Bernie Sanders and AOC does, right?
Yeah.
They just completely ignore the delegates because nobody cares about an island nation with no voting power. With no ability to put
pressure.
Rich
people just move there to dodge taxes.
Exactly. Yeah, and the Puerto Rican government has been happy to oblige because, you know, neoliberal politicians have been in control of Puerto Rico and the U.S. has quite a strong grip over the I guess, unincorporated territory. I almost said state, but not a state.
Not a state. Not a state.
The Puerto Rican government, of course, wasn't operating very fairly. Very neoliberal, as I said. A lot of corruption in the government. And especially at this point, including within PREPA, because you can't really get around that. I have a quote from the New York Times. They said, quote, a 2019 investigation by the United States Department of Justice found that after Hurricane Maria, PREPA employees accepted or demanded bribes to restore power to residences and businesses before serving critical locations like San Juan Rio's Pedras Medical Center. The power authority also mismanaged a warehouse where materials were stored that should have been available to help restore the power on the island. And over 6 years, more than $300 million in public funds was spent on consultants related to PREPA.
I love consultants. I fucking love consulting firms. They're so good.
So
they do so much.
So employees of PREPA, again, ran by the government, was just accepting bribes.
Uh-huh.
They were not delivering power to the people that needed power, that didn't have the ability to give bribes. And they were basically spending millions of dollars on themselves or consultants that wanted to, you know, reap hundreds of thousands of dollars off of this government program.
That's crazy.
So it was being basically hollowed out from within because of all these budget cuts and because they had to run like a business, because they wanted to make a profit, because they had no other means of operating, right? You have to profit as much as you can if you're not going to be funded publicly. If you're not going to have enough funding publicly, that is.
Damn, it sounds like they could fix a lot of these issues if they collected capital gains tax.
Yeah, you would think so, right?
Any type of tax on the rich people that fucking move there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then in 2021, here's the kicker. Here's what all of you are going to love. And I wonder, you know, if you predicted this in the beginning, I want you to leave a comment and let me know. In 2021, the Puerto Rican power grid was sold off to a private company, LUMA, which is a Canadian-American power company known for providing terrible fucking service.
2021, was that before? That was, must have been after the Texas power grid failed, right?
Uh-huh.
They saw that and they said, yo, these private power grids, they sound like a great idea.
Well, yeah. after PREPA being, you know, horrible for however many decades, they basically sold it off to a privatized company. And they were already working with LUMA and a couple of other private companies. And then eventually the Puerto Rican government was just like, fuck it. Just give the power grid away to somebody else. And now, like, LUMA has a monopoly over the whole
island. Like, what I would imagine the neoliberal argument here, the neoliberal framing, is that, look at this government organization, they couldn't get it done, so we need to point to the private sector
so
that they can come in and fix this mess that the government made.
Yep, and that's exactly the point I was going to get to a little bit later on. But this is the neoliberal strategy, right?
Yeah.
You defund important public infrastructure, important public services, and then say, look how inefficient this is. We need to do something about this. And then you sell it off to a private government or a private corporation or company, mm-hmm. and they can profit as much as they want. When if you would have just funded the government program, the public program to begin with, it would have been fine because PREPA was working fine in the past.
Yeah.
It was providing everything that people needed in the past, albeit there were still probably issues.
Used to be great.
Exactly. If we would have funded these public programs and we didn't, you know, take away all the tax revenue that it relied on in order to function, then maybe we wouldn't have to sell it off to a private business, a business that just wants to profit and make things worse for people.
A business that solely exists to extort them.
LUMA promised to revitalize the power grid while decreasing costs, but of course this didn't happen. Some residents even noted rate increases of more than 100% from $80 a month to $200 a month. And mind you, you can't just find another power supplier in Puerto Rico.
Like, you're maybe on an island.
Right. Maybe in the United States you can go from consumer energy to something else. But in Puerto Rico, it's only LUMA. There's no other option.
Yeah.
It's like you have no choice but to just pay this much money in order to get power.
And it's also a fucking island.
Yeah.
Like,
right, there's not much of a choice there.
What do? Go get a generator?
Yeah, exactly.
And then spend ridiculous amounts on gas?
Right. And this brings me back to Hurricane Fiona. Now, Hurricane Fiona was, again, a Category 1 storm, which is the weakest it can be, and it completely just shattered the island.
Okay.
It ransacked the island, tore down bridges that were newly built, obviously shut down the power grid basically immediately. And now there's a couple reasons for this, right? Like, no matter how good your infrastructure is, if you're hit by a natural disaster, things are going to be bad. Things are going to break. But this is something that Puerto Rico could have been prepared for had they adequately funded their public services. And of course, it's not the fault of the people in Puerto Rico. It's the fault of neoliberal capitalists and the United States government for never actually giving them what they need in order to operate. Viewing Puerto Rico as solely as a means to extract profit off of a workforce that obviously is going to work because they have no other choice.
I just love how so much of this issue that we see now with PREPA and the power grid just stems from the idea that if you're a rich person and you move from the continental U.S. to Puerto Rico, you pay 0% in capital gains tax, especially considering that that's how rich people make all of their fucking money. Yeah. Usually people with that much money, they're paying 20%. In long-term capital gains,
right,
20 to 25% in long-term capital gains taxes, that is hundreds of millions of dollars when you look at the volume that these motherfuckers trade. That's insane.
Yeah, exactly. Hundreds of millions of dollars. And like that could have maybe made up the debt that PREPA had, or maybe
it would have stopped them from accruing that
debt. That's what I was going to say. Like, it could have stopped them from ever having to go into debt in the first place because they wouldn't have to operate in a for-profit manner.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not getting them, like if you run a government service, right, whatever it is, you know, say we nationalize transportation systems or something.
Yeah.
If you're running a government service and you're told, all right, you have to manage all of the busing networks in the country, and then you don't get enough money to do it, you're going to have to start charging people fares. You're going to have to start cutting corners. You're going to have to start paying the workers less. You're going to have to start running buses less. You're going to have to cut back on that essential infrastructure and start running more like a business because you're not getting the money that you need to begin with.
Yeah.
So you have to incorporate a for-profit mindset, which is exactly what destroys public services like PREPA was supposed to be.
Love that.
Not great. That. The story here is that PREPA was made to fail by neoliberal politicians, both in the U.S. and there were, of course, politicians in Puerto Rico that were amenable or sympathetic to neoliberal causes in the continental United States. They were intent on making Puerto Rico as open to wealthy investment as possible. FEMA obviously dropped the fucking ball when it came to providing them with funding after a natural disaster. And the power grid was sold off to a private company. It's failure at every level of, you know, the free market, quote unquote free market, and it's failure at every level of the government, you know, completely screwing the Puerto Rican people over again and again. And it's all because, you know, these kinds of things, like the power grid, has to be profitable in order for it to be valuable. Mm-hmm. When if we completely decommodify these systems, then we would never have to worry about it. Of course,
yeah.
You know, a hurricane hitting the power grid is still going to cause damage. But at the very least, we could be sure that consumers and just regular everyday Puerto Ricans aren't going to be fucking ripped off on the other side of that.
Like, what happens? I understand that PREPA and FEMA couldn't come to terms on, like, how much money, where the money should be spent. Mm-hmm. And so FEMA only gave them $7 million. What happens when LUMA does the same thing?
Exactly.
Like, right. What happens when LUMA does the same thing and says, we want to spend the money elsewhere? Do they automatically just hold more weight at the bargaining table because they're a private enterprise,
right,
and they've got profit margins to worry about and they can show you that?
Right, exactly. And I know there was some kind of public involvement that LUMA had, like some kind of transparency measures that they had, mm-hmm, that last year they just completely took away. I think they used to, their board of, I don't know, board of directors, whatever it is, used, yeah, to be like public, a public thing. And now it's completely private. Like, it's just a completely private board of directors that the public has absolutely no power over. And voters in Puerto Rico were protesting against it and just nothing happened. Cause what are they supposed to do?
Did they list themselves on like the S&P?
I'm not sure exactly.
Like, are they like a publicly traded company now?
I have no idea.
That'd be
no idea,
fucking nuts.
Yeah, no, it's really awful. And it's not just Hurricane Fiona, by the way, because blackouts were pretty common in Puerto Rico, even under LUMA, even before a storm hit. Uh-huh. Like, people would just experience blackouts. Like, they were just saying service was just worse than it was under PREPA.
Love that.
And it's a problem, again, of essential infrastructure being ran like a business to keep taxes and wages low for corporations.
It's crazy, because now, like you're saying, they have a private board of directors now. Now they have a fiduciary responsibility,
yes,
to just make their board of directors money. Like, that is their primary goal. To within all of their services is embedded the idea that they just need to make their investors more money.
Uh-huh.
That's it. Their care for the people of Puerto Rico and providing them with power that they fucking need, mm-hmm, to survive in the 21st century only extends as far as their ability to make money off of those decisions.
Absolutely, yeah. And like, this is the broader point I want to make with this story, because there's actually a couple places around the world right now that are being hit with pretty catastrophic natural disasters.
Yeah.
I know Japan's being hit with, I think, what's being called a super typhoon.
They get hit with tsunamis all the time. It's, yeah, crazy.
I think 9 million people just had to be evacuated from their homes,
God,
which is fucking crazy. I think there's some kind of natural disaster hitting one of the coasts in Mexico. There's a lot of bad shit happening right now.
A hurricane set to hit Houston. In, really? Like, a month or something.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, there's a lot of natural disasters happening.
Another
right
private
now.
Power grid, baby. Let's go.
And we'll get to the talk on climate change in a second. But the larger point I wanted to make here about Puerto Rico is that this has been the U.S. hegemonic project since about, like, the 1940s. Mm-hmm. Since the end of World War II. It has been opening up economies around the world, every country on the planet, to investment and trade that exclusively benefits U.S. capitalists.
Yeah.
With absolutely no regard for the regular people that live there. And it has been the foreign policy goal of the United States to open up these countries. And you can think of however many you want in Central and South America, whether it be, you know, Guatemala,
yeah,
or Puerto Rico, Guam, or like any Nicaragua, Honduras, like whatever country you want to think of, even countries in over in Asia. It's been the U.S. policy decision to open up these countries to as much investment as possible and treat them as though they are simply markets to profit off of.
Mm-hmm.
And open them up so that U.S. capitalists can go wherever they want and withdraw funding and put funding into whatever location they want without any kind of regulation, without any kind of regard for the people that are actually living there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happened in Puerto Rico too.
And it's crazy because that's just an inherent thing to capitalism.
Yeah.
That's not even a colonialist mindset, unless you say that capitalism inherently colonialative, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I'm trying to get to. But that's just the mindset. It's like you see it all the time when people are talking about, like, oh, the Chinese demographic doesn't like this.
Mm-hmm.
You see it, bring it back to movies, like when people, the Force Awakens,
okay,
marketing campaign was going around. You see they cut Finn, the black guy,
yeah,
out of all the posters to fit the Chinese market. Like, shit like that happens all the time. You,
right,
you aren't thought of as a person under capitalism. You're thought of as a market to be, for money to be taken out of.
Right, exactly. And like when I say the U.S. hegemonic project, I mean that the United States wanted to implement a world order, right?
Yeah.
Like we wanted to build a global capitalist world order that was focused again on free trade and open door policies, that kind of thing. And of course, there were many, many countries that opposed this.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many islands and other nations that didn't want to go along with what we had to do. And what did we do when those countries said no, other than the USSR, which had nukes? We did coups. Famously, this is my favorite example, in Guatemala, 1950-something.
Okay.
They were previously, they basically produced one thing back then, and it was
bananas. Banana Republic.
They were just
not Banana Republic. That's a fucking brand.
That, well, and it's a term for a...
For
for, country that like looks like a democracy.
For the U.S., because Trump was raided.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a banana republic.
But Guatemala in the 1950-something, all they really did was produce bananas, and people were subjected to pretty terrible working conditions. Mm-hmm. The country was basically owned by the United Fruit Company.
That's United Fruit Company. That's what I was trying to think of.
The people there, they had their second democratic election. They elected this new guy. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name. And they were like, you know what? We need some land reform. And they did land reform. They made it more equitable. Wages were raising. They told the United Fruit Company, like, fuck off or treat us better, basically. Mm-hmm. And the United Fruit Company went to President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And they said, hey, yo, they're doing a revolution here. This is communism. And we did a coup.
And he said, we have to stop the spread of communism. You don't understand. When one domino falls, they'll all fall.
We funded far-right extremists. They beat the socialist guy, quote unquote, in a coup, and then they installed a military dictatorship that lasted for decades.
Love it.
All because a fruit company wasn't making the profits it wanted to. And now the United Fruit Company is Chiquita's. So if you're ever eating a Chiquita's banana, just know you support colonialism.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Exactly. But there's 2 points I want to make here. Okay. Two points.
Okay.
This is the new form of colonialism, right? Like when we're talking about neocolonialism, we're not talking so much about military domination as we're talking about economic strangulation, right? Mm-hmm. Holding onto a country's economy so closely that if we wanted to, we could destroy it at any moment. We could withdraw all of the funds from that country and make it basically fall apart. And that's exactly what's happened with Puerto Rico. Like Puerto Rico isn't being militarily occupied. At least as far as I know. Like, there's not, like, U.S. troops that are policing the streets that are forcing people to labor. But if they do not comply with U.S. corporate interests, the island basically falls apart.
They get fucked.
Like, and it's like, no matter what Puerto Ricans do, whether they protest or they just take it, they're fucked either way. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens when you have massive power imbalances in the world.
Yeah.
This is what happens when the United States, you know, as much as it is losing power at this point on the world stage, this is what happens when over decades, corporate influences and capitalists, you know, accrue more and more power. They can basically force countries to do whatever they want.
And it's like, it's not even something that's exclusive to international relations. It's something that you see that happens within our own borders. Mm-hmm. Many episodes ago, I want to say like 20 episodes ago or something, we covered this case in Tennessee. I can't remember the town anymore, but essentially the state comptroller threatened to get rid of this town's charter because, well, I mean, spoiler alert, the town was, I believe, 78% black.
Right.
And also had gone through other problems because previous white boards had fucked over the town, mm-hmm. extracted resources, then left. And then as soon as they get new management, Ford or some other big car company wanted to build a new plant right next to the town. It was going to bring a shit ton of jobs and a shit ton of money into the area. Mm-hmm. And so the state comptroller took away their charter and said that they were going to take them under complete financial control of the state. Yep. So the city cannot operate autonomously, as autonomously as a typical city runs from the state government, you know, and they were going to be absorbed into the white county right next to them.
Exactly.
Just completely disenfranchising the people of the small town.
Right. And it's like that form of control is seen as less brutal because it doesn't have direct military or police involvement. You know, people aren't being forced to comply. There's no gun to your head that forces you to go to work every day. But the coercion still exists.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have the ability to choose otherwise without taking on serious damage.
It's just that it's quote unquote unjustifiable because mm-hmm. look at they're mismanaging their money or look at they clearly have done something wrong in the past, like this government organization PREPA. Mm-hmm. It's not working. Something's going wrong.
Right. Exactly.
But we're not going to look far enough back to see what actually went wrong.
Exactly. And my second point here is that this is absolutely one of the effects of climate change. I said earlier that regardless of, you know, how good their power grid was, even if PREPA had been perfect up to this point. Mm-hmm. A hurricane still would have hit Puerto Rico and it still would have done a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And a lot of people still would have suffered. And to an extent, there's not much you can do about that because we haven't done anything about climate change. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of just where we are at this point, is that like, if we don't do anything about it and we haven't been doing anything about it, then the poorest and those that are least protected, least represented are just going to suffer the most.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
It's a little bit.
That's really where we are. I mean, because it's like, it's, I guess, I don't know, territories like Puerto Rico and I guess just like really every coast in the world, the poorest people there are going to suffer the most from mm-hmm. climate change. A lot of people will say like, you know, we're all passengers on the spaceship of Earth. You know, we're all in this together. And it's like, we're not. Because the effects of climate change are undoubtedly caused by capitalism, and those that are causing those that are causing climate change are the ones that are never going to feel the consequences for it.
Oh, yeah, no. Or they'll feel it later.
Right.
They'll feel it later, after everyone else.
Right. And I can say with certainty that it's the fault of capitalism that climate change is happening because, and we've talked about this many times in the show, capitalism has a constant need to grow. Mm-hmm. And the constant need for expansion and profit accumulation has led to us tearing the planet apart.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think there's really any argument against that. Like, undoubtedly, even if you're a supporter of capitalism, you have to recognize that we are producing so much that the planet is being fucking destroyed.
And it's like, it's not profitable to invest money in research into photorespiration and understanding carbon fixation and increasing rates of plants taking carbon out of the atmosphere to fix it to themselves, to build themselves up. It's not profitable to fund that kind of research.
Right. How do you free market your way out of this one?
Yeah.
And then anytime we see like capitalists actually trying to be like green or, you know, like supporting the earth, it's like fucking Jeff Bezos sending a rocket to space.
Jeff Bezos or sending like Elon a rocket Musk, to like, space talking about how beautiful it is.
Right.
It's everyone telling you to use shitty paper straws that don't fucking work.
Yeah.
While they take their private jet trips from L.A. to another place in California. I can't remember what the Kardashian did.
From L.A. to the other side of fucking L.A.
Yeah, like, no, it's like, taking a 10-minute private jet
because they don't want to be among the fucking plebeians driving. Mm-hmm. It's fucking insane. And we need to stop that.
Yeah, stop it now.
And I also want to make a note that this isn't just like the situation with Puerto Rico and how much we've basically discriminated against the people of Puerto Rico. It's not just like a Republican thing. It's Democratic and Republican. Obama did it plenty too.
Yeah.
Neoliberalism and neocolonialism are all the same, even if it's a coat of red paint or a coat of blue paint.
Foreign policy is bipartisan.
Exactly.
Same thing, same principle.
Exactly. It's all kind of just smoke and mirrors at that point. But moving on, and speaking more about red versus blue.
Oh.
Coming back to domestic issues.
That's
since
right.
We are the number one geopolitical podcast.
We are. Had to dip our toes in again.
Coming back to the continental United States really quickly, Republicans are back at it, being openly in favor of the wealthy controlling elections and politics.
Let's go.
Because we got a bill today about campaign spending.
Today? Ooh.
Well, we got it. They voted on it last week.
Oh, okay.
We got to talk about it today. So last Thursday, the Senate voted on a bill called the Disclose Act, which aimed to place greater regulations on campaign contributions. It did a number of things, and this is just my summary. Mm-hmm. So you can go read it if you want. You know, if you're screaming in the comments, what else was in the bill?
Yeah, what's the text of the bill, huh?
You can go read it for yourself. But what the bill did was make it more difficult for foreign nationals to do campaign spending in the United States. I think that makes a little bit of sense. It forced PACs, which is a political action committee, and super PACs to disclose all contributions, and we'll get to this in a second. It empowered the GAO, which is the Government Accountability Office, to do an investigation and report on illegal campaign contributions every 4 years.
Sounds like it can't be a bad thing.
A little bit more transparency. And it strengthened penalties for election-related crimes and made it a crime for PACs to solely exist to conceal election contributions. So you can't just make a PAC to hide where your money is, basically.
Okay. Sounds like all good things.
Right.
Right?
Sounds like only a good thing, right? Like changes to election laws historically have only ever been good.
How could more transparency be bad
for democracy,
for democracy, for like election laws, for campaign contributions?
And I'll get to it in a minute, but Republicans voted the bill down in the Senate unanimously. It was a party line vote. But
no, you don't understand. Our billionaire backers literally cannot publicly donate to us without destroying their reputation.
Yeah, exactly. Before we get to the Republican response, I want to give you a little bit of context because I feel like a lot of people don't know how campaign spending and election laws in this area work. So if you don't know, there's an individual contribution limit for every citizen.
Is it like a couple $100?
Well, no, it's the same for everybody, and it changes each year. Right now, I think it's something around $3,000.
Oh, $3,000.
Okay. So you can donate, like if you wanted to right now, for each election season, you can donate up to $3,000 to each candidate. Okay. It doesn't have to be like 3,000 divided between your candidates. You could like donate 3,000 to Bernie Sanders if he was running. You could donate 3,000 to your house, the person that's running the house, if you wanted to, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a max of 3,000 you can donate directly to candidates, okay? And this has been the law for quite a while. Mm-hmm. This isn't a new thing. The problem, though, is super PACs. Now, PACs, just regular PACs, are political action committees, and they also have contribution limits, but they can do as much spending as they want, right? Like, you can donate to PACs, and they can go and spend in a number of ways, but they also have some disclosure requirements. The problem is super PACs. They are 501c4 organizations. They can do unlimited spending and receive unlimited contributions, and they have no disclosure requirements.
Why?
That's
why? Why, if a pack, a regular pack, has disclosure requirements, would you then say, but a super pack just doesn't?
There's differences in, like, nonprofit laws, because I think this exists under, like, the nonprofit code of law or whatever, 501 okay. organizations. I think packs are technically 501c3s. Don't quote me on that.
Just with
though.
Like
that
a special designation right. that turns it into like a C4.
They're like a political organization, yeah.
A political nonprofit.
Right, exactly. Oh, okay. Something like that. Something like that. And 501c4s are basically just loopholes in the tax code.
Love that.
To do unlimited campaign spending. Now, super PACs can't directly donate to politicians. They can't directly give money to, you know, say if there's some giant super PAC that is like formed off of Exxon, because that's a thing that can happen, by the way. Super PACs can branch off of companies.
Yeah.
Say that Exxon made a super PAC. They can't directly give money to Donald Trump, but what they can do is spend money in unlimited ways as much as they want on electioneering. So things like ads, commercials, billboards, canvassers, they can sell whatever message they want and spend infinite money, and they can get as much money as they want from their contributors, and those contributors are never revealed. That's what dark money in politics is.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So when you hear people talking about dark money being in politics, that's what it is. It's people donating millions and millions of dollars to super PACs that super PACs can then do whatever they want with.
We should start
Which
our
obviously
own,
gives a lot of power to billionaires.
We should start our own Dark Brandon super PAC. So all exactly. your dark money that's coming to yeah. us, we can go dish out however we see fit.
So I hope you see the problem here. Super PACs, basically these unregulated political groups that have no disclosure requirements. They can take the money of billionaires and sell literally any message they want. Yeah. Basically no regulation on them. Which is partially the fault of the Supreme Court, because Citizens United said corporations are people, and you can't regulate that. The spending of people because that limits the First Amendment somehow. But Woo. Yeah, that's kind of the situation right now. And as you can imagine, as I said before, the Republican Party voted this down. It only got 49 votes.
Wow.
One Democrat wasn't there to vote is why it got 49 and not 50.
Oh.
So it didn't even, it didn't hit 50. It didn't, it's not going to hit the filibuster break-in number. So it is
I love that.
Never going to pass in the Senate, at least the way that we have it set up right now.
That's so fun. That's so fun.
Yeah, yeah. Not really great. Not really great. But a little bit of the Republican message. I thought this okay. was funny okay. about this bill. Because you may not be that interested in campaign
I
finance.
I love funny. The funniest thing will happen.
But the funniest thing will happen. Republican Senator Bill Hagerty from Tennessee, he said, quote, "We all want transparent and fair elections, but these goals aren't served by limiting Americans' First Amendment rights."
Americans?
Americans First Amendment rights, which is what the Disclose Act would do, because this legislation promotes intimidation and cancel culture rather than free speech. I voted against it.
Bro really just threw up the buzzwords.
Yeah.
Like, he just threw the buzzwords in there, every single one that he could cram in.
Yeah, and I wanna follow like the logical leaps he's making here, right? So he says that this bill, which all it does, the biggest thing it does is reveal like who's donating to super PACs, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't say they can't do it. It doesn't limit how much they can do it. It just forces super PACs to disclose who they're getting donations
from. You don't understand,
from.
Guys. Now our donors can't admit publicly that right. they are supporting vile things.
Right, exactly. Like it's basically toothless in terms of enforcement.
Yeah.
Because you can't do anything against, like, I don't know, Elon Musk donating fucking $1 billion to whatever organization.
But you don't get it. If they see that Elon Musk donates to the Republicans, they're going to cancel him.
Exactly. They're no, that's exactly
him.
What
they're
going to
take
say.
The food away from his family.
It's like, guys, if my supporters get canceled, the people that fund the super PACs that support my message,
yeah.
if they get canceled, then I might lose re-election.
Guys, no, you don't get it. This one billionaire that gives me $1 billion a year, somehow, you guys are going to cancel him if he's disclosed. Then he's mm-hmm. not going to have food to put on his family's table anymore.
It's ridiculous that they think cancel culture is like this material, tangible thing that uh-huh. happens. Like we used to, humans used to exile people, right? Uh-huh. Like we used to kick people out of society and force them to be alone or go somewhere else.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. Like that's not what cancel culture is now. Like if like Elon Musk getting canceled on Twitter, he still has billions of dollars.
No, and it's also like cancel culture is really just deplatforming somebody. It's deplatforming someone off of like Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. You can't deplatform a billionaire.
Right. No, like they still have all of their money. They still run all of their businesses. They still have all of the power they did before. They just can't, I don't know, shitpost, say racist things. Like
they can't even not do that because nothing would fucking happen. It's crazy. Right. Especially in a world where it takes like, what, $10 million on average to win a Senate election?
Yes.
Super PACs are insane. Yeah. It's an insane idea.
No, yeah, super PACs are crazy. It's like every single presidential election year, I think just every single election year, we set records for how much money is spent in elections.
Oh, let's go.
Like, we spend billions. I think the Joe Biden campaign alone, without even super PACs being involved, spent something upwards of $500 billion to get elected as president. And he got a lot of donations from a lot of people because he was running for president. Everyone hated Donald Trump. Yeah. It's 2020, et cetera, et cetera. But once you put in super PACs, like, we're talking trillions of dollars that are being spent on elections. And super PACs are these giant organizations that we basically can't regulate that can say whatever they want and meddle in elections as much as they want. It's ridiculous that they even exist.
Shit got me flummoxed, honestly.
It's like three of your favorite oligarchs coming together and just choosing who wins, like a house race.
For real, because all of it comes down to strictly how much money is spent on these ads.
Right.
Like half of it, even half of it, is the actual messaging. It's about how much people have ads.
Right. And like, yeah, there's liberal super PACs too.
Yeah.
But for the most part, and it doesn't even matter like how super PACs are distributed in terms of ideology. It's just the existence of them threatens democracy itself.
It's like the fucking Patagonia guy. Right. We didn't cover it on the pod last week, but Patagonia, the owner of Patagonia, he never took his company like public. He always had it private, but he just took all of his proceeds from it, all of the profits, and he's restructuring the company into a 501c4 and turning it into a super PAC to fight climate change. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, it's this one guy is doing, I guess, a good thing, if he even spends it on good things
in the context
climate
of
change.
Like billionaires,
in the context of the system of super PACs existing, I guess, yeah, it's cool, but I don't think you should be able to do that in the first place. But if it's going to happen, I guess it's this guy, that's fine.
Right. Like, I mean, like, even just donating directly to politicians is crazy. Like, just the fact that exists, because most people, vast majority of people, don't have $3,000 to donate to, like, a Joe Biden campaign or a Donald Trump campaign.
Pocket change for a guy like me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Podcasters like us.
Pocket change for a guy like me.
Like, most people don't have the ability to do that. And it's already crazy that we can have people donating thousands of dollars and mattering more to these politicians than the regular person who may not donate at all. But just the existence of these massive political organizations that do nothing but interfere in elections is fucking wild.
Like, shouldn't it realistically, like, ideally be no donating to politicians and politicians getting out there based on like word of mouth,
right?
You know, shouldn't that really be how it is, like naturally being covered by people in media, like who like them?
Regular media coverage, right?
regular media coverage. Word of mouth, people reading about them in newspapers, actually tuning into like debates and shit,
right?
Rather than, oh my god, I saw an Alyssa Slotkin attack ad the other day, apparently she votes with Joe Biden. That's
right.
Crazy.
Exactly. And it's like, we've gotten close to that before, like many times throughout history we've talked about publicly funded elections, right? Like, we just set in a pool of money that is taken from, you know, 1% of your tax dollars or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's what's used for presidential campaigns. They don't rely on contributions. They don't rely on super PACs or PACs or anything else, or, you know, money from unions or whatever, because Republicans love to talk about that. They just get publicly funded election dollars and that's it. Like, they do what they can with that money.
Yeah.
And if they run out, they run out. If they spend it right and they win, whatever. That would be a much better way to do it, because it's a lot fairer for everybody. And especially it would allow poorer people to run for
then
office.
You don't have the DCCC making you call three people on your phone and raising $500,000 right in front of them just to get an endorsement.
Right, exactly. But there's no way that we will ever, especially today, get to publicly funded elections, because if we do, that would wildly decrease the power that capitalists have over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a fucking chance that they're going to let that happen. There's like, they would relocate all of their fucking jobs to Mexico before they let elections be publicly funded and people have an actual say over what happens in government.
Love that.
So that's a fun little rant.
Fun little oligopoly rant.
Fun little oligopoly
rant. But now, it's time for a little whimsical beyond parody.
That's right. That's right.
And that's right, folks. Today, once again, I'm coming to you with another school, not just another school, another Michigan school.
Let's go.
Who just banned a bunch of books this week.
Oh, let's go.
So basically, Davison, Michigan.
That's right around the corner, baby.
Right around the corner from us. Davison. I could fucking drive there after the pod for fun.
For real, I could go restore the books.
I could go put the book back in the library, exactly. Right? So Davison School Board voted to ban 8 total books from the district's library. Five of the books are being banned from the middle school, and 3 of the books are being banned from the high school.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what books they are. It's a lot of ones I've never heard of, and it's not as interesting as like the genderqueer one we talked about a couple weeks ago. One of the middle school ones was Perks of Being a Wallflower. Which I feel like is so fucking weird. Like,
that is random.
Why are you hyper-focusing on Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Is it because Ezra Miller was in the movie adaptation?
If that's why I support it, honestly. Trust
that guy.
Hold on a minute.
Cannot trust that guy.
It's because of, like, scenes of, like, it's sex. Like, basically, the common theme with this book ban is sex and being gay.
Oh, well, yeah,
that's what's going to get you banned from the Davison High School and Middle School Library. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I wanted to focus on one book in particular.
Wait a minute. Are they not, like, reading Catcher in the Rye and Great Gatsby anymore? Then?
That's what
both
I was
thinking.
Both of
those books have sex in them.
I immediately thought of Catcher in the Rye, too, because amongst Perks of Being Wallflower, I had never seen the movie. I'd only, like, heard of it. I thought it was pretty tame from everything I've heard. But there's, like, depictions of sexual violence and, like, drug use.
Okay.
Which is, like, kind of tame for, like,
things that happen in
days.
The real world, by the way.
Things
that
happen in the real world.
Understand.
Things that happen in a lot of different media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's also, like, it's a fucking book you gotta go see. Seek out, like, come on, like, I would never just go, let me go read Perks of Being a Wallflower, but I digress.
Nobody's teaching that in their curriculum.
Exactly. It's just something you can go get at the library if you hang out at the library and want to find a book.
That's the thing that gets me about all of these book bannings, is that they are banning books that probably no kid picked up in the library. Yeah. Maybe, like, one kid picked it up. Like some, some kid that reads especially more than everybody else.
No, that's what I'm trying to get at.
But it's like nobody is picking up these books in the library. Most kids aren't going to the library to pick up books.
I don't think I stepped foot in my high school library like once to get a book. Unless I explicitly had to for class.
Exactly.
Unless I had to go to the library to get a book for class. I never fucking went there.
No.
And I'm just not a reader. Like no hate to you if you are a bookworm. But there's like two bookworms who are going to the Davison Library to get Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Exactly.
But, and that's in middle school too. The one book I want to focus on that got pulled from the high school, it's titled, quote, Healing Sexual Trauma Workbook, Somatic Skills to Help You Feel Safe in Your Body,
oh my
Create Boundaries,
God.
And Live with Resilience.
Oh my goodness, dog. What is
that
this?
Got banned.
Yeah.
That got banned.
What is this world that conservatives want to create? It's fucking crazy. It's like it's not even that they want to like protect children or protect their innocence. It's like they want every child to be completely fucking ignorant of real world things that happen.
Oh, literally.
That people need help with.
And it's like that totally applies even to like the fiction things, like Perks of Being a Wallflower and any book that depicts sexual assault and like sexual violence and has themes of sexual anything.
Or
you're gonna experience that in the real world, especially if you're in high school, because high school is fucking wild. You're gonna experience that. You're gonna come across that. The world's kind of an awful place.
Yeah,
and it's fine to explore that in media, especially in like a fucking book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think this is so egregious. Let me read the blurb from Google. Let me read the description from Google Play Books.
Okay. You got it.
Overcome shame and stigma, and bring a newly felt sense of safety, awareness, and life to your body. If you've experienced rape, sexual abuse, molestation, or sexual trauma, you may feel as if you've lost a sense of yourself. You may have difficulty setting boundaries or building satisfying sexual relationships. Sometimes you may even feel like your body isn't your own. You aren't alone. The scars of sexual trauma exist not only in the mind, but also in the body. And in order to heal, build resilience, and discover a sense of hope, you must address both. Drawing on the powerful mind-body technique of somatic therapy, the Healing Sexual Trauma Workbook is a step-by-step guide to overcoming the psychological effects of sexual trauma and increasing positive body awareness and vitality. You'll find tools to help you create an internal sense of safety and become more embodied and present. You'll also discover ways to establish boundaries, move beyond intense feelings like shame, fear, and guilt, and deal effectively with triggers.
Jesus,
that got banned
fuck,
from
God.
The library because it talks about sex.
They
said that was inappropriate, that kids shouldn't be exposed to that. You know the only kids who are going to check out a Healing Sexual Trauma Workbook?
The kids that
are kids
it.
Who have experienced sexual violence.
Uh-huh.
That's it. You're not just picking up that book for fun. It's not light reading.
Yeah.
You're doing it because you need it, or maybe your therapist fucking recommended it to you.
Here's the thing. I'm gonna talk about some real shit, so I'm gonna issue a trigger warning real quick.
Yeah.
Just like on topics of sexual violence and stuff. Just about every woman I've met in my life has had some kind of experience where they were either made to feel sexually uncomfortable, usually by another man, or they full on just had a violent experience that they were not consenting to. Like almost every woman I've ever had a close relationship with has told me about some kind of story in regards to that. And the fact that conservatives today would take away one of the very few things that women can use to relate to and to feel better about their experiences because they're on some fucking tirade against kids learning about the world and being safe in their own bodies is crazy to me.
Oh, yeah.
You're killing people Because one of the main things that you need after you've experienced sexual violence is something to relate to, especially mm-hmm. if you feel like you can't talk to people, or maybe it was like a family thing that you experienced, so you can't go to your family members about it. You need something that you can relate to make it feel as though you're not so alone, not so on your own dealing with this kind mm-hmm. of problem. And if that thing that you need is a book, and again, because the only people checking out this book is going to be the people that have experienced yeah. this kind of thing. If that kind of thing is a book, then you need that in order to get through it.
And it's
especially if you don't have like therapy or support systems to rely on, you need something to get you through that. And conservatives are taking that, like they want to kill kids. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
No, and it's so wild to me because the whole idea here, right? The whole idea behind the conservative mindset is that, oh, kids shouldn't be exposed to sex and sexual violence in school and things like that. One, it's the fucking library. Nobody's going to the library. We already established this. Mm-hmm. And two, it's not like they're not getting that on the fucking internet.
Right.
Go yeah. to AO3. Go to Wattpad. Read some of these fan fictions. They're absolutely crazy. And beyond that, a lot of people I know started watching porn in middle school.
Well, and
you want that to be their only experience with sex,
right?
Rather than like a book who deals with like themes of sexual trauma, sexual right. violence. Not that every piece of media that deals with those themes is unproblematic. A lot of them, in fact, are, but they're not worried about that.
Here's the disconnect I think conservatives are having with people like us that like understand and live in reality.
Yeah.
There's a difference between teaching somebody about sex in a healthy way and sexualizing someone as mm-hmm. you're teaching them about it. Those are not the same things.
Yeah.
Teaching high schoolers or middle schoolers about sex, about what is healthy, about what kind of situations you should keep yourself out of is not the same as sexualizing those students.
Yeah.
It isn't the same thing. In fact, it is important to teach these students as they're growing up in middle school and high school about sex in general and about consent mm-hmm. because if you don't, they are more likely to encounter sexual violence and not know what to do about
it. They're
more likely to be taken advantage of. They're more likely to be groomed. So by banning books that teach kids about sexual health, by refusing to teach kids about sex in general, you are almost guaranteeing that they're going to have negative experiences mm-hmm. as they grow up. You're almost guaranteeing that they're not going to know what to do. Again, teaching someone about sex is not the same as sexualizing them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they don't fucking understand that.
And it's just the whole thesis that the library is this ultimate place where these kids are going to learn about sex, yeah. the fucking school library, as if it's not just the internet.
Yeah.
The internet or TV and movies as a whole. I guarantee you every single high schooler and pretty much every middle school already knows about sex before even stepping foot into their school right. library for any reason whatsoever. And they found out through the fucking internet, mm-hmm. through movies, through TV. And unless you're fucking banning them from the internet at all, just gonna get them completely ostracized from society, not know how to deal with anything in the modern mm-hmm. world, you're not doing anything. And that's besides the fact that strict parents raise sneaky kids.
Right.
Like no kid is sneaking off to the library to read about sex. Like that's not what happens.
Right. Just the existence of the internet guarantees that you're not going to be able to regulate kids finding
exactly.
out about any topic, right? It's not just sexual things. It's literally anything. Kids, probably all of them have cell phones by the time they get into middle school now.
Yeah.
They literally can just find anything they want. They have a supercomputer in their back pocket.
Facts.
That they can find anything they want with. You taking books out of schools and making it harder to be a teacher, making it harder to be a librarian. And by the way, they go to school for like 8 years to be a librarian, uh-huh. which is fucking wild.
They're
like some of the
crazy.
Smartest people on the planet. But like the fact that you'll just make their lives harder and make schools worse isn't going to stop kids from learning about these things. It's going to make it so they just have worse experiences overall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially like, cause like talking about the internet again, cause it's pertinent mm-hmm. to the conversation, right? Like I remember one of my first experiences with like porn is when I was in middle school, I was into The Simpsons. Like I was getting into The Simpsons and I had started like pirating it cause I wanted to watch like all mm-hmm. 25 seasons at the time, like through and through.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was on this website just pirating The Simpsons, having the time of my life. But every once in a while, like a porn.
I'm reporting you to the,
Federal
Trade Commission
cops
or something.
Or whatever.
the Department of Commerce or fucking.
Shit. Oh my God. From pirating The Simpsons. Yeah, so I'd pirate The Simpsons, and every once in a while, a porn ad would pop up. And I was like, what the fuck? This shit is yeah, crazy.
Exactly.
What is going on here? But I had other resources to look up and like understand what sex was, and
right.
luckily like my mom talked to me about it. But I guarantee these conservatives are not talking to their kids about sex in a healthy way.
No.
And if their kid ever wants to know, they're banning the only resource they have to know. If their only resource is the public library.
Well, yeah, and it's like they're taking away kids' ability to learn about it in an actually healthy way that doesn't come from the internet, which completely melts your fucking brain
Absolutely.
The day you start engaging with it. They're not teaching about it at home. In fact, conservatives are probably teaching their kids that like it's a sin to ever think anything sexual, that like you're losing your purity or you're not innocent anymore. I'll be super disappointed in you if you ever think anything like that, which again,
kiss a boy.
Basically guarantees that they're going to do it.
Real.
Because you're not talking about it in a healthy way. And then you're taking away the one way that they can actually learn about it. The one way that they can actually engage with, I don't know, topics of sex in a way that's not going to absolutely melt their brain.
I love it. I love how, like, I don't understand how they can't, like, see that, you know? Maybe it's because they feel like they're on the school board and that's, like, the only power that they have. Mm-hmm. But they don't ever come, because, like, the topic of this Davison one is that most of these books had LGBTQ characters in them.
Yeah.
Except for, obviously, the Healing Sexual Trauma workbook, because it's a workbook to heal sexual trauma.
Yeah.
Right? It's mostly a crusade against gay people and a crusade against sex in general.
Right, yeah.
And maybe they're on the school board, so they feel that banning books from the library is the only thing they can do. But, like, come on now.
Right.
You're completely ignorant.
Yeah, and like, by the way, and we're about to talk about abortion in a minute, so it's kind of related.
Yeah.
But banning books about sex, I guarantee you there's going to be a statistically significant increase in teenage pregnancies. If you don't teach them about sex adequately.
Yeah.
If you teach abstinence only or just never talk about it.
It's adjacent to abstinence only education.
You're just guaranteeing that it's going to happen.
Thanks.
Like, what the fuck? And then you're going to force them to go through with birth. It's like, I don't even think the conservatives are thinking about it in terms of like what's going to improve good outcomes or what's going to bring about good outcomes. They're thinking about it solely in reactionary terms.
Oh, they're only thinking about it based on the puritanical standards they have for sex. They only think about it based on the fact that they've never been able to please their wife and they only have sex once a month just because that's what people in a relationship do.
It's like, in their mind, it's like, sex is evil. We're all sinners deep at heart. We've all committed, what is it, like the first sin?
Original sin. Adam and Eve did original sin when Eve bit the apple because all women are bad.
Like, we're all born damned. We all have to repent for our sins even if we haven't done anything yet. And I'm going to impose my belief system on all of your children, but you're the one that's indoctrinating and you're the one that's grooming.
Real.
Me, I am correct in the eyes of God.
You are grooming your kids, even though it has been statistically determined that all of the policies that I support increase rates of childhood pregnancy.
Yes.
And it cause a greater need for abortions.
Right.
Which I morally oppose.
Yeah. Not having like a robust sex education makes it so children are less likely to be able to identify when they are being groomed.
Yeah.
Because if you teach kids, and you teach students about grooming in high school, and they understand what it is, they're more likely to be able to identify it and get themselves the fuck out of those kinds of situations.
Facts.
But if you don't teach them about it, how do you expect them to know? They're children. they don't know anything about the world growing
Literally.
Up. All you fucking know is that you like having the hamburgers at lunch. You like having the popcorn chicken.
A 14-year-old freshman isn't going to know that it's weird when the senior starts talking to him and says, hey, you know what? You're kind of mature for your age. Yeah. Unless they've been exposed to that before, because that shit is weird.
Right.
Like, there's an alarming amount of people that I've known that didn't think that kind of stuff was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it baffles my mind. Like, dog.
Yeah.
Significant gaps in life experience, for one.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting that a lot of the time, the blame, especially when it comes to abortion and pregnancy-related stuff, is almost always put on women in these kinds of circumstances.
Because they're being so promiscuous. They're harlots.
Right. It's always placed on women, and men are almost always given a free pass when it comes to sexual acts, right? Like, you kind of just expect men, like boys being boys kind of thing, right?
Oh, my.
You're just expecting men to act like that. But when women act like that, they're somehow being impure. They somehow need to be punished for the way that they're acting. And the moral responsibility is always put on women, and I don't think it's a mistake.
And it's like, no, with that, tangentially related, have you seen the Adam Levine? You've obviously seen the Adam Levine drama. You made that fucking meme that we posted on the story. The fucking meme where it's the picture of me from the merch drop. It's like, your fucking body is amazing. The Adam Levine. I'm sure you are all caught up with the Adam Levine
photo
drama.
Goes hard.
The photo does go hard. Pick goes hard. Feel free to screenshot. I'm sure you're all caught up with the Adam Levine drama. Basically, he cheated on his wife who was a Victoria's Secret model with like some other girl. And then that girl made a video talking about, like, I don't even know what her video. It was just like talking about the situation. People have been absolutely dogpiling that girl. And it's like, yeah, obviously she did a bad thing. She is just as like morally responsible for this bad act as Adam Levine is. However, I think the response has been disproportionate hate in her direction rather than in Adam Levine's direction, because the only shit that I've seen thrown at Adam Levine is the memes.
Yeah.
I've only really heard people call him corny. I've only heard people talk about payphone song, and that's pretty much it. As if we just expect men to cheat.
Right.
However, yeah. the women that they cheat on their partners with are the ones who are the harlots. They are the homewreckers, not the man, not right. the man who cheated on his wife. He's not the homewrecker. The woman who entered the relationship through the pursuit of the man is the one who wrecked this marriage and thrown it apart. I've seen people get completely psychotic analyzing her video. This motherfuckers have gone through and like, look at her body language right here. She's clearly lying about this. She doesn't feel bad at all. She's such a fucking witch.
Yeah.
And it's fucking insane to see all this. Because all Adam Levine is getting is payphone song corny.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are just eviscerating her character.
It's almost like this positive feedback loop where we expect men to be bad and yeah. then they are awful. And then we're like, oh, well, we expected them to be
so
bad.
So we justified them right, in doing a bad
then
thing.
Then they are morally justified in doing that bad thing. And then when, you know, they come to reckon, especially when it's like Adam Levine, right? A public yeah. figure. When they come to reckon with the actions that they've done, nobody really gives a shit. But then the women are blamed and they almost get like 200% of the moral responsibility
Absolutely.
Of what happened. They almost get blamed for making the man want to do the bad
yeah,
thing.
And it's like, I'm not saying that she didn't do a bad thing. Obviously, they both did a bad thing. She's morally responsible too. But the response is disproportionate here. Mm-hmm. And I think it just points to broader trends. Rain Corp on TikTok did a good TikTok about this, and she's about to drop an essay. If you fuck with Rain Corp, I'd imagine maybe some of you do. But that's one to check out.
Well, of course we expected the man to do that, but, like, you should have known better.
Yeah, is what it, it's yeah like, you should have known better. Like, come on, he's a celebrity. He's cheated on his wife before, which he has.
Yeah.
He has. Exactly.
It's fucking terrible. Terrible.
Love it.
Time.
I hate fuck misogyny. Me and all my homies hate misogyny.
Me and all my homies, we absolutely hate misogyny.
That's right, baby.
Misogyny is awful. We hate it.
So wet-ass P-word.
Speaking of more misogyny.
Speaking of misogyny,
we have an Arizona abortion update. Shout out to all my Arizona listeners. You're going to want to hear this one. So basically, a couple days ago, an Arizona judge ruled to overturn an injunction on a law from 1901 that has language dating back to 1964.
Kids were still working at coal mines back then.
Arizona wasn't a state back then.
Oh my God.
Arizona wasn't a state until 1912. So that's just a whole nother layer of this that makes this wild.
Oh my God. Was the Civil War even over in 1864?
I honestly have no idea.
I think it might have just been over. I can't remember.
Didn't we only have like, I don't know, 35 states in 64 or something? Other 64, not 1964, 1864?
Yeah. We had definitely not fully expanded westward.
Yeah. Arizona wasn't a state.
Arizona
four score and 140, 160 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's crazy for one. And this law was a near total abortion ban that only had exceptions for the life of the mother. Okay. The only time you can get an abortion is if you're just going to fucking die instead. And it also stipulates a 2 to 5 year prison sentence for anyone who helps someone get an abortion. But it gets more complicated. Because Arizona passed a 15-week ban as soon as the Roe decision dropped, it's unclear what law is taking precedence, and so doctors don't know what the fuck to do.
How was there an 1864 ban in Arizona if Arizona wasn't...
It was a territorial law.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like right there, federalism falls apart. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
How are you going back to a law that... What?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Women couldn't even vote back then. That's right. crazy.
Right.
That's that's literally Jim Crow, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
like, yeah.
Well before Jim Crow, yeah.
Well before Jim Crow, even worse.
Yeah.
Civil War probably
Slavery.
Wasn't even over.
Slavery.
There were probably still slaves in the South at the time
yes,
that this law
was
drafted.
Absolutely.
I feel like everything from that era should be let go.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just based on being from
that. There is no relic that we should hold on to that existed back during the 1860s. Absolutely not.
Probably nothing good really came
There's
from that
There's no
era.
Justification.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, yeah. So doctors are confused. They don't know what fucking law to follow. And so the people who run the Arizona government, the governor, Doug Ducey, said that they need to follow the 15-week ban. However, the attorney general said that it needs to be the older ban.
Why are you running defense for this, dog?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God. It's
That's
a competition. It's like, who can kill the most people?
I know, but it's like, those are the only public statements that anyone in the Arizona GOP has made about this law at all.
Mm-hmm.
They've mostly stayed silent because they know it's unpopular.
Right.
Doctors yeah. are fucking yelling at them because they don't know if they can do any abortions. They don't know what law takes precedent. And if they make the wrong decision, they could go to jail for 2 to 5 years.
Right. So the law that the injunction was just overturned about, that's a total abortion ban no abortion ever.
No abortion ever unless the mother is going to die.
Right, exactly. And that's of course, it. You can't really tell when the mother's going to die because complications can happen very quickly.
Unless she just die.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because you could, I've seen a couple of people talk about this. I think Dr. Eric B on TikTok has a lot of videos on this specifically. But sometimes there are indicators that there's going to be complications with a pregnancy that don't really say what's going to happen, but you can tell, like, this is a sign that there's going to be complications. Yeah. And abortion would be medically the thing to do.
Like, if we're talking chances here.
Right, exactly.
Like, we're talking, like, okay, you have these symptoms. Something is happening in your uterus right now. There's about a 60% chance that if you go through with this pregnancy, your life will be in danger.
Exactly, right.
What's a government official going to say about that?
Exactly.
Who's completely opposed to abortion? Are they be like, well, there's still a chance though?
Right. They're going to say there's still a chance, or the law is going to be so vague that the doctor is just going to have to side with, well, we can't do anything.
Because I, like, don't want to personally go to jail.
Even if you're presenting signs that, in my opinion, you are, I don't know, you have a 70% chance likelihood of having a complication with pregnancy that could be life-threatening.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to jail.
I don't want to go to jail. Or I think that there's a 70% chance that this pregnancy will be life-threatening, but you need to get a second opinion at this pro-life doctor.
Yeah, and then it takes 3 weeks. The pro-life doctor says you're going to be fine, and then, you know, a couple of days after that, you have a complication, and by the time they could even get you in for an abortion, your body has suffered extreme damage, or in worst case, you're not alive
anymore.
You
fucking die. Or you have the first doctor who said 70% chance you kick the bucket if you go through this pregnancy. We need to get you in for a second opinion. Second opinion takes 3 weeks. You've passed the 15-week threshold.
Yep,
you have to carry the pregnancy.
Exactly. And it's like the most insane take I've seen on this is that people are like, well, people that die from pregnancies that would have lived if they got an abortion makes up like 700% of, or not 700, 700 cases of abortions like each year, right? Like it's a super tiny amount of like the hundreds of thousands of abortions that happen in the United States. And it's like, you're okay with just killing those 700 people? You're okay with them
it's
just
a small
fucking
amount,
dying.
So it's okay if they go away.
Right, like it's a percent of a percent of a percent. So if 700 women just fucking die, I'm fine with that. Not very pro-life of you.
Not very pro-life at all.
Crazy.
But like, obviously that's wild. The merits of this ban in of itself are fucking wild.
Insane.
The fact that the law predates statehood is wild, but I do think it is notable that no one in the GOP is talking about this. They are staying silent, and I think it echoes what we were talking about last week when mom, Lindsey Graham, girl name, and dad, Charlie Kirk, were fighting.
True.
Because Charlie Kirk's whole thing was like, you need to stop with these national abortion bans because abortion is unpopular. We will not win in the midterms because of this.
Right.
And now with this injunction going through, I feel like that might be like a nail in the coffin for a lot of Arizona Republicans.
Yeah.
Who are running in tight races against pro-choice Democrats.
The last thing that conservatives want is to make 2020 elections a referendum on abortion. Because if they do that, then they will lose. Like every other sign politically right now with the political climate, whether it be like inflation or economic issues, gas prices, et cetera, everything points towards a Republican victory. But if they make this a referendum about abortion and other social issues, social justice issues, then conservatives actually stand a chance of losing. And Democrats might not only hold on to the House and Senate, but increase their leads based on the races that are happening right now in various states. The last thing they want is for abortion to be a main topic heading into the election.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to bury it because they keep bringing up shit like this.
Facts.
Every few weeks, you know, we'll stop talking about abortion and won't come into the news. And then like some Republicans like, yeah, we should probably kill women.
Yeah. I actually fucking hate women.
Right. We should probably make abortion illegal. And if you even think about doing it, we should probably give you the death penalty.
And especially, again, focusing in on Arizona, quick Google search. ProChoiceAmerica.org. New polling shows 9 in 10 voters in Arizona support the freedom to decide back in February 28, 2020. That's not a good look for anyone running in the GOP in Arizona this year, especially for the midterms. It's kind of fucked.
Yeah, they have they got a governor election coming up with fucking, what's her name? I can't remember. Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake, crazy neo-Nazi supporter, et cetera, et cetera. They got a Senate race with Mark Kelly versus whoever's running for Senate. Blake Masters from Arizona.
Yes.
Who
we talked about that guy.
Blake Masters, who most recently quoted Ted Kaczynski, I think.
No shot.
And he said, like, Ted Kaczynski had good ideas or some shit like that.
Let's go.
Bro called him Theodore Kaczynski, though.
Theodore. They're close like that.
Yeah, exactly. They're buddy,
Theodore Kaczynski. Isn't Blake Masters the Silicon Valley guy?
Yeah, he's Silicon Valley Peter Thiel friend. Apparently there's some fucking strife in the Republican Party right now between like the Peter Thiel type Republicans, the ones that are like have a lot of money that kind of exist outside of McConnell's realm, and Mitch McConnell himself.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a lot of like internal debate going on with them right now of like who's going to run the party, basically.
That's crazy.
So Republican Party may be having their own little civil war right now.
Oh.
Crazy.
Speaking of civil war, did you see that Bill Gates op-ed that came out?
No,
where he talked about how political polarization may lead us to a civil war very soon.
Wow. Thanks, Bill.
I love
astute fucking observation.
No, literally. I love it when people like that, like people who are like known by the public for being smart and shit, try to dip their toes into politics and just say political polarization is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And don't point out why certain kinds of political polarization are bad, because I guarantee you this is not a both sides issue, Bill.
Uh-huh.
It is the American right going very far right. Again, we're podcasters. The left is basically filled with a bunch of podcasters.
I feel like the person that tries to like jump into the middle and say, everyone, let's calm down right before the Civil War starts off, is the first one to get fucking obliterated.
Facts.
You know what I mean? Or they just end up siding with the fascists.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you're not going to...
Because the fascists hold their class interests.
Right, exactly. Like, you're not going to end up siding with us because by you saying we should just calm down, you're immediately placating to them who are the ones that are fucking insane and want to kill people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, dog, you can't just tell us to calm down when we're the ones that just want to give people healthcare and they want, like, gay people to all die. You know?
Facts.
Like, I don't think these are even terms. I don't think these are even playing fields. I don't know what you're doing.
Dude, and speaking of fascists, we're at the end of the show, everybody. You already know. There's no more. So, the little end of the show riffs. Special note for everybody who stays this long. I didn't throw it in the show notes this week because there's, like, not much about it. We might have to talk about it next week, though. Italy is doing an election right now for their first prime minister. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I've not.
So, one of the people is basically a fucking neo-Nazi.
Nice.
It's a girl, though. It's a girl neo-Nazi this time, and she's been running her campaign on becoming the first female prime minister and sort of co-opting like liberal identity politics get it. And I saw a video about it, and they're interviewing people on the streets on why they support her. And a lot of the people have been like, oh yeah, she's like just like a girl like me, and just kind of ignoring the fact that she's a neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
So that's actually wild. Maybe we'll have to dive into that next week. And it's like, it's nuts because her party is like, I can't remember the name of it because obviously it's not the show. It's a little riff at the end. They had like 0.4% support in the last election, and now it's up to like 28%.
That's
and she's looking
nuts.
Like she could become the fucking prime minister of Italy. She's running on like Christian values, hating gay people, a bunch of shit like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, fascism, I feel like fascism around the world is rising again, especially, we know what Italian fascism looks like.
No, that's what I was thinking.
We really do not want that again. We know what that looks like. But yeah, fascism's rising around the world right now, not only in the United States, but, you know, we saw Marie Le Pen in France.
Yep.
Of course, you have Viktor Orban in Hungary, who's been there for a while now. But also, to link this back into something that we talked about previous in the episode, climate change, I feel like fascism is only going to get worse as mass migrations start to happen because, you know, large swaths of the planet become uninhabitable. And then more people of color have to move into mainland areas.
That's large slots of brown people coming in, diluting the purity of the white race.
Hey, no, that's exactly what they're going to say. You know, as more and more people flock to wealthier countries like the United States from other countries that are now uninhabitable, they're going to be like, oh, look, the ones causing the problem are trying to come into the country. They're the ones that sinned and caused God to expose his wrath to
look
all of us.
Look at
this
IQ map.
Exactly.
Look at this IQ map that shows that people in Africa on average have less of an IQ, as if IQ is a actually reasonable measurement, and also as if we didn't fucking rape Africa.
Right.
For
right.
all of its resources.
Right. No, yeah. It's like the fascists are going to, they're going to help cause the problem, and then they're going to claim the problem is like God's wrath because we've sinned or something.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is something they say after every like natural disaster happens. It's like, oh, well, must have pissed off God somehow.
Exactly.
It's like, no, dog, we're destroying the planet. It's us doing it.
You know, we did piss off God when we destroyed the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, didn't he also create that too?
For us.
Yeah, come on. What is it? On the seventh day, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Oh my goodness.
That's wild. But it's also like, and then what? What happens when the fascists, right? The neoliberals just join up with them? It's like in France, what did Macron do? Macron sided with Le Pen. Like, joined up to oppose somebody else
who
was,
Macron
like, pro-Islam.
Was running against. Oh, you mean, like, before the, it was just Macron versus Le Pen?
I think it was, didn't Le Pen, wasn't that, like, the first round of, like, the election?
The last round was Macron versus Le Pen. Macron won.
Oh, okay. There was something about, like, Macron sided with Le Pen.
Because they both hate Muslims.
Because they both hated Muslims. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that shit was fucking wild.
Because didn't the, was it like the burqa ban or something happened under Macron or something like that? Because he hates Muslim
because,
people?
Because he just wants to free all the Muslim women by banning them from expressing their religion.
From their religious practices.
Because it's always oppressive. It can never not be oppressive.
Exactly. If they're, you know, in France, a place with freedoms, willingly choosing to do it, you are, yeah, you're somehow already.
A place where they're not mandated to by the state to do it, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, CIA starting a podcast.
So fucking funny, dude. The Langley Files, what was it? The headline that I read said something like, the CIA is starting a podcast to sort of show you how boring its work is compared to its Hollywood counterparts.
Propaganda.
Absolute propaganda.
Fucking propaganda.
It's called the Langley Files. Listen. Like, I know you're not talking about the files like MK Ultra. I know you're not talking about how you blicked MLK. Mm-hmm. Come on now.
Yeah, I know you're not talking about the 80 coups you did in Latin America.
Literally, though. I know you're going to started off, I haven't listened to it, obviously. I don't think I'll ever listen to it, because I'm sure it'll just be boring drivel. But I know you're not going in there and being like, yeah, guy, or you are going in there being like, yeah, we're not today's CIA is not the CIA of MK Ultra.
We're diverse.
It's not the CIA of before. Today's CIA is not the CIA of CIA black sites torturing people in Iran. Yeah. Obama banned torture, guys.
No, it's going to be like that commercial that dropped last year.
No,
where it's like, I'm a bisexual, a dyslexic 30-year-old
my
with
existence
anxiety or whatever.
Is intersectional. And I am a woman in the CIA. I am a woman. My bombs have rainbows on them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be
so
great.
Funny. It's so funny. And I love how the CIA, it always, every year without fail, they're like, we're not the CIA that we were before. As they declassify documents of atrocious things that they did before. And they continue, you can trace it back to when we've declassified documents of awful things they did. Or they said, no, we're not that awful CIA that was happening beforehand.
Guys, we don't do those things anymore. We've changed.
They're classified.
It's absolutely, no, yeah,
gonna,
it's crazy.
I'm going to declassify them with my mind.
Oh, you got to.
I will. I'm going
to pull us back, to bring us full circle to the beginning of the episode. Listen, CIA, I know you're listening to this.
Exactly.
Because you probably listen in on everything that leftists do, honestly. I know you're listening to this. We got it covered. You don't need to do a podcast.
Yeah.
I promise we got it covered. What you could do, though, is send some CIA money over to patreon.com/headintheofficepod.
For real.
And then when we are shouting out our people, we could be like, special thanks to the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States.
And if the FBI could also inject some funds into my account because they think I'm going to do some non-discriminate acts, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to get Merrick Garland on the show, that would be pretty crazy. You know what we should do? We should have the CIA guy, whoever's running the podcast, come be a guest on the show. We should do a little collab.
That'd be fire. You know, a collab with the CIA. Today, special guest, the Central Intelligence Agency.
So you say you're not doing coups like you did in Bolivia anymore. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Could you explain what you mean by you're not the CIA that you were before? You're a new CIA. You're a boring CIA. That's just paperwork and everything.
Let's see. The CIA just revealed that they did a massacre in Kuwait in 2003. Could you explain what you...
Could you explain what's going on here? Could you explain what's going on at CIA black sites in the Horn of Africa?
Yes. CIA, if you want to come on the pod, just let us know. We'll hook you
no,
up.
No, please. I would.
We'll
I would. If the Central Intelligence Agency or the Federal Bureau of Investigation or any three-letter organization wanted to come on the show, I would have you on in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. That would be the interview of a lifetime. Make or break right there. But until you guys become a patron and until the CIA becomes a member of the head in the office community,
exactly.
We got to shout out
I'm
those.
Sure one of them's in the Discord.
Oh, definitely. We got to shout. Yeah, one of you in the Discord.
One of you in the Discord. I know you're a fed.
Yeah.
I know you're a fucking fed.
And as soon as we find out who it is, we're giving you a new role in Discord, and it's going to tell everyone that you're a fed.
For real. It's like that one fucking meme that goes around the schizo slideshows every once in a while, where it's like, yeah, every time I'm low on cash, I just start talking about committing vague acts of domestic terrorism, and the FBI Venmos me money to buy a gun.
That's awesome. But before we go, we got to give a special thanks to the members of the three-letter organizations that do support
people
us.
People that keep the lights on, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. People that keep the studio lights on. People that let us buy new headphones, even though we don't need them.
True.
Because the mixer is messing up for some reason.
Right? We found out you literally have to put just the tip in for the headphones to work.
Exactly. Crazy. Nice. But anyway, special thanks to Cricket Scrapbook Glass, Nikki Nine Lives, Kaden Kraut, Lord T, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Katz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T, John G, The B-Plot, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaForte, Ash Fairblood, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Derek Messina, Dylan B, The Mind Sculptors, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Meyer, Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vasquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mubari, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Megan Latau, Jeff Muzzy, Ted Cruz's Boy Toy, Bagel Burrito, and My Mom. Thank you all for supporting the show on Patreon. We couldn't do it without you. Get us to that $600 goal.
Please.
I want to do a Q&A.
That's another episode in 1 week.
Exactly.
We're getting there. Disco thread? Disco thread.
Exactly. Also, quick little update on guest interviews.
Oh.
We're planning on doing our first one pretty soon. And it's going to be available to patrons for a week before it's available to everybody else.
That's exclusive access.
So if you want to become a patron, or if you want to get access to those interviews, yes, as soon as you can, you got to become a patron. We want to pump out interviews with other people. Maybe have them come on a guest regular episode.
True. More details soon.
Exactly.
Got to iron out the kinks a little bit, but it's right around the corner.
More details coming very soon. If you want to be the first to hear about it, got to become a patron.
Got to become a patron. Got to hit the Instagram. Got to hit the Twitter. Got to hit the TikTok.
Exactly. Thank you for listening to the episode today, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Have a good one.